Hey everyone, I'm Michael Whistler, and I sincerely believe that science fiction can help us save the world. On this episode, I invited my very good friend Mike Palumbo to come discuss Devs with me because he kept trying to get me to watch it for ages, and I finally did. So let's dive into Devs and figure out why you should never trust a tech tycoon, I guess. This is Exploring Tomorrow. Mike, thank you so much for coming on to the show. Before we get going here, maybe tell me a little bit about yourself. We know each other through work, through Votary Films. So tell me a little bit about what you do there, so folks have a little bit of a context of who you are, what you're up to, and then we can get into discussing Devs here in a little bit. By the way, loving the glasses. Are those new?
Oh, thanks. Yeah, these are kind of new. I got these in another pair at the same time recently. I like them a lot because they're blue light protection, which I don't know if that's actually even a real thing, but they tell you get blue light protection for screens, and they're also light sensitive, so I enjoy them. I buy direct. I'm not sponsored by them, but that's my choice for glasses. Anyway, yeah, I work at Votary Films. I'm a film director and director of marketing and sales, and I've been there for a while, so I've done a lot of different things over the years. And it was more recently we realized we didn't have anyone kind of owning marketing, so I was like, well, I'd like to do that more than just focusing on sales, because ideally I'd like to have more sales come in from the marketing versus trying to reach out to other people. So and I'm also a musician and writer and aspiring filmmaker.
I think we're all aspiring.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for coming on here. As I have said, even in other episodes where I've had so far my friend Andy on, I record a podcast, but it's kind of ends up being an excuse to hang out with my friends. So,
yeah.
And right, it's given COVID and everything, and sort of, my department being kind of off in its own little world, our paths don't cross enough. So it'll be nice to get a chance to chat a little bit.
So, I know. Well, yeah, we would probably have this conversation for an hour in the office.
Yes.
So
back in the day, I know we have, we've probably had similar conversations about like Blade Runner 2049 and whatnot.
Yeah. I remember when I was slowly realizing just how much of a sci-fi fan you are. And then when you presented your screenplay idea that you had, written a book for, I was like, okay, this guy's in it. he's deep in the sci-fi realm. I enjoy that. I don't remember when I first recommended Devs to you, but I was like, oh, if you're into sci-fi, I like sci-fi, but not everything. I end up kind of going towards a certain type of sci-fi, I don't know, when it catches my eye. But You gave a little bit of your thoughts in the beginning here when you were like, maybe we shouldn't trust, I was like, all right, well, I want to know your opinion. First off, like, what was your first impression?
My first impression, I remember you recommending, and I had another friend actually recommend it as well. But my first impression is, I think you did nail well your recommendation in terms of, because I remember... I make note when people tell me like, oh, this seems like very much your kind of whatever, right? Your kind of book, your kind of movie, or your kind of sci-fi. And I think that's more or less what you'd said. It was like, oh, it seems like your kind of sci-fi. And I think you nailed that. Like in so many ways, it is kind of blends that mysterious very methodical pacing, intention, with character driven, and just a lot of questions. Like, so it's character driven story, but there's still like intense plot. There's a lot of like, you're constantly wondering what the hell is going on. And so I think like you nailed that as far as like saying, like, I think it seems like you're kind of sci-fi. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it very much is. And so, yeah, like my immediate reactions on, you know, as soon as I started watching was like, oh yeah, I'm hooked. I'm interested. I definitely want to see where this goes. And it is fascinating that it is, like, I was just looking it up to remember, and it's like 11 minutes shy of 7 hours total running time of like the whole show. So
yeah,
it is not a big commitment. And what's cool about that then too, is it makes it rewatchable. Like, if you can make 7 good hours of really cool storytelling and do something compelling and thoughtful with it, then it invites revisiting, which is always a welcome thing. Not enough shows do that. It's more about the model of milking it for as long as possible, which I get. It's like everybody wants to have a job for a long time.
Yeah. But if it's at the expense of the story after a while, where you hear people being like, ignore the first season and then ignore the last two or something.
Right.
You know, there was a lot of those shows, I feel like, in the 80s or 90s, where it's like there's this beautiful section in the middle.
Yeah,
but it kind of might start clunky, and it might end like just wear out its welcome. But I think the mini series structure is really exciting to me. Not all mini series are amazing or anything, but I've seen so many good ones. Maniac is a good one on, I think it was Netflix. Mm-hmm. Amazon original by Nicholas Winding Refn. I like recommend to everyone, and no one watches it. Too Old to Die Young. That's one of the best, like, shows or films or anything I've ever seen. And that's a miniseries. I don't think there'll be any more of that. Mm-hmm. I feel like Devs could continue, but I don't think it will.
Right.
Like, it would, I mean, yeah, we don't want to jump into the end, but,
we can, but fair warning to listeners or viewers that, then going forward, it's spoilers. So I think the consensus here, obviously, is that, we recommend it. So you don't want spoilers, and, you know, then seriously, it's not a huge commitment to check out, you know, less than 7 hours of show, and it's satisfying and really good.
Yeah, you'll know if you want to keep watching within the first episode.
Yeah, you'll know.
Like, if it's like your style. For me, I knew I wanted to keep going, and I had kind of the beginning and end bookended in my mind, when thinking about, you know, talking with you about it. I was like, I'm just going to refresh my memory. And I restarted it, and I just, again, the same experience where I just finished that first episode and was like, oh, it's so intense. It's so good. I got, and I just rewatched it. And I literally just finished the last episode a few hours ago. I just rewatched it the last few days. I had forgotten some things, and it kind of brought up questions I remember having while watching it before about predeterminism and just mulling over my own thoughts about it. And I've been really trying not to look up things, you know, like do a bunch of research, like, and watch other people's opinions. I've been trying to kind of just be like, well, what is this? What do I think about this?
Right.
And what is this sort of, what does the show kind of mean to me? And what are my opinions about, like, the ideas it's presenting, and what are my opinions about the plot? And, you know, I'm always tempted. I'm that guy who, like, when there's special features on a Blu-ray or something, I'm like, I gotta watch everything. And then I go look up all the YouTube videos, and I love that stuff. So I was trying not to do that with this. But yeah, that first, cause that first conversation, I guess maybe should we do kind of a recap of the plot for anyone?
Yeah, we can give a quick overview. Yeah,
people listening to this may have seen it.
Right, may have seen it. Maybe a little while.
Just in case they haven't.
Yeah, because it's worth jumping back into it there. So the story initially, I think, and this is one of the things that really fascinated me too, is like how the first episode begins, and you initially have this sense like, oh, it's going to be Sergey's story. So you got this, you know, right. Big tech company, and you're like, what in the world's going on? And they're doing these crazy experiments that seem to be able to like figure things out. Like they're looking into the future basically and playing with these models of like a deterministic universe. So it's like, well, yeah. If we tweak and if we get enough sort of calculation, enough data, we can actually predict what's going to happen a few seconds from now and things like that. And this particular programmer is doing this experiment with these worms, and he ends up having a successful presentation, and he gets sort of sucked into this very secretive program. They're the devs department at this big, and it's like it's not even entirely like clear exactly what else they do, but it's this like, yeah. Google Apple-esque mega campus kind of weird place. It you know, there's a little like, I don't know if you've seen or read The Circle. It's playing with some of the same sort of big tech ideas in that there's this like, if Google and Amazon and Facebook were all just like this one big conglomerate, and the movie, right. It's Tom Hanks is kind of the head honcho, and Emma Watson is this new recruit coming in there, and they, you know, so there's like some similarities there, but that's more about like the power of social media and sort of mind, whereas Devs gets into this more of like you're saying, questioning, is everything predetermined? Are we in a deterministic universe? Do we have free will? And so Sergey gets pulled into that world, right?
And the presentation is like what kind of wins him the position, because he shows how he basically is able to predict the movements of this organism or this kind of worm. And that's, you know, you come to realize that that's basically what is happening in Devs.
Right.
As you're watching it, you're not realizing that yet. What you told, as a viewer, I should have guessed that early on, but I really didn't. I was like totally just kind of along for the ride. Like, what do they do in Devs? Like when they sit him down, mm-hmm. and he's just sitting at the computer and it's just open code.
Yeah.
And he's just like, there's no back doors. There's no login. You know, you'll figure it out kind of thing. Come and go as you please. You know, which I love how they like present it. It's like some people work nights. It's almost like this ideal job scenario where it's just like, you know, he's making crazy money.
Yeah.
He's coming into this, like, I mean, visually insane, stunning, like immaculate, like very 2001 A Space Odyssey, like inspired looking box with like gold bars coming out of the ground and lights on the, it's in rings around the trees and like lights in the grass. It's just so, so gorgeous and weird.
Levitating elevator walkway thing that like moves in between,
yeah,
because they have to have this like completely insulated,
yeah.
That's the other thing that's so interesting and secretive about it, right, is this thing that's off of the main beaten path of the campus and is super secretive. No, you know, you have to have all these clearance to be able to get in there. Not anybody can just get in there. And then this basically, that the building operates essentially as a Faraday cage. So you have no ability to send or receive signals once you're inside. And because the data and what they're doing really does have to stay right there. It's so sensitive. And so it's like, yeah. So they're like, yeah, if you want to come work at night, whatever, come work at night, but you can't take work home.
Right. Yeah. So what you said earlier about like how you'd never really see, or they seem kind of like they're just the leading tech company in the world, basically.
Right.
And I love how you never really see what the world is like outside of the campus. It's sort of like these massive shots of like San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful, like, you know, it seems like it's our kind of modern age, but it's almost like they just blew every tech company out of the water. And they kind of mention that when the senator comes to meet Forrest, like the owner of the company,
right,
to sort of, you know, basically say like, we need to monitor what you're doing. And she, you know, gives a little recap of like, you guys basically are the leading technology. And I it's sort of implied that they do quantum computing, but maybe they have, you know, a branch for every type of, you know, major technology we're familiar with. But they don't really go into it. It's not like you don't really see. It's funny because you don't see people with like Amaya phones or like, you know, like,
right.
I was kind of surprised by that. Like they didn't make Amaya seem like it owned everything, where like people had Amaya laptops and there was like branding everywhere. Like they didn't really do that.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, but it was like, okay, but they clearly have like insane resources and like why, and the tons of employees.
Right.
It's like a campus. Why are, like, what are they, I was just like, what do they do exactly? Like, like cybersecurity?
Mm.
Like, why is it like a university?
Right.
You know, it's like so interesting. I love how they never really, yeah, they keep you in that world. And they also keep you questioning the whole time. And it's not really about that. It's just about devs.
Yeah.
Really. And the characters.
Yeah.
But true. Yeah.
It's crazy and fascinating. And yeah. And so like I alluded, like you think it's going to be maybe Sergey's story, right? And then spoiler alert, if you really, really want to go watch it, go watch it. So you've been warned.
Yeah.
But yeah, end of first episode and Sergey's dead. And,
yeah.
And you're just like, what is going on?
Honestly, it was gotta be like the most, or one of the most like chilling murders.
Yes.
In like a show or series or a movie ever. It's just so ominous. Like his little speech beforehand.
Yep.
And that's really what makes it, you be like, question what he's saying. They're like, well, do I believe that kind of thing? And is this is this trying to say that that this philosophy carried out to its, you know, furthermost point breeds this level of insanity? Or is it just that, because it's fun to like sort of think, you know, think of a certain philosophy and be like, okay, would this make sense and like just take it to its like furthest point?
Right.
And does it still like kind of hold water? And his character is almost like, let's really embrace, like super embrace the deterministic viewpoint. And like his whole, I just remember that speech when I was remembering the show. I just, that speech of the universe is deterministic and we're on tram lines.
Yeah.
And you can never deviate from them. And how he basically uses that as a way of forgiving Sergey for quote stealing a code on his James Bond watch.
Right.
And just like how he like puts his hand on his shoulder and then Sergey like runs and gets like tackled by the security guy and just like bag over his head. That it's just so brutal.
And
like the ring above his head and everything, like that whole scene is just like, it almost feels, it happens in the first episode, but it almost feels like a crazy betrayal, even though it happened so soon in the story.
Yeah.
Like they could have dragged that out more and really made you think like Forrest is like is going to be like an interesting, almost protagonist.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, we don't have a protagonist really. It's just kind of ends up being by default that we go to, why am I? Oh, Lily. Yeah, Lily.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man, it's a fascinating and like I think a risky way of doing sort of the introduction, the story, because like you get to know Lily in the first episode, but you don't really get to know Lily, you know.
No,
but
I think it's supposed to be like a you know, I gotcha kind of thing, like kind of a surprise. Shocker there, where it's like, oh, I guess we're following her now.
Yeah.
And Sergey's a big, the actor too, is a big actor. Mm-hmm. So that was great too, to have him where he's recognizable, and Lily, the actress playing Lily, is not.
Right.
Like, she's relatively lesser known, I would say. So that was another thing where you're like, oh, okay. Like, this guy's just done.
They pulled a Psycho on us.
Yeah, exactly.
They kill off the star, so to speak. And,
yeah.
It's like, oh, actually, there's still more movie. And in this case, there's a lot more story. So, yeah, the story after that is basically Lily starting to piece together, because first she's like, my boyfriend's missing.
Right.
And then it's, well, we have evidence. We have this tape, right? Security tape from the campus where he appears to kill himself, set himself on fire. And
which is such
yeah, a bizarre, so dramatic. Right. Such a dramatic way to you know, but it also like allows them to like have a body without leaving too much evidence, right? Like,
right.
So it's like you're going to have a hard time doing a good autopsy that you'd be able to see that he was suffocated and all this stuff when you've got this crispy body, you know? So it's really crazy. And of course, so she starts to kind of question things and then brings in, like, actually connects with her ex. And there's that whole interesting the story unfolding there as she's like trying to unlock what in the world is going on and why she, you know, was Sergey killed. You know, she starts believing that, you know, something happened to him. He didn't just go and kill himself. And slowly we get to start seeing what Devs is all about. And it's fascinating to remember that speech that you were talking about there, that Forrest, that Nick Offerman's character has, you know, in that first episode. And then I think there's some fundamental ways in which the show then actually confronts those notions and that question of, but can we really for sure say that we live in a deterministic universe?
Right.
Yeah, you know, because even to the point that one of the programmers that's working in Devs goes against Forrest's directive of we can't introduce a like multiverse kind of model, you know, and where things are just splitting off because we're making different choices and different things are happening. We have to like stick this model, but he introduces this other thing and they have more success with being able to both look back in time and look forward. But he's not thrilled about that. Yeah,
they expand like all the possibilities from all worlds, which right. They're not, I could probably go back and try to understand exactly what they do some just sci-fi explanation there where they're just like, there's, you know, there's the Everett interpretation, which says that there's, you know, many worlds, and the sort of the multiverse right. interpretation. And somehow that represents, somehow they're able to capture that in an algorithm that they introduce into the system.
Right.
That then opens up all these other possibilities, and so yeah, that character shows like you get to hear a actual clear sort of representation of Jesus talking. Mm-hmm. They go back and do like the sound recording of or a playback of a prediction of what a version of a Jesus from a certain timeline said
right
one time or another, and the whole and the reaction of Forrest being like not enthusiastic at all and firing him is like a shocker, but not so much a shocker if you're thinking, well, he's so staunchly against this multiverse thing,
that's not our Jesus. He's like
that's not our Jesus. Yeah. Therefore it's not my Amaya, and that's really when you realize, okay, this, mm-hmm. that's, I mean, you do realize it beforehand, but that's kind of the moment you realize just how, like, hell-bent he is on just, I'm going to get back to my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the whole driving force of the show, which is another reason I love it so much, that I think that this is how people are. Like, we over intellectualize things only when it is comes from a really deep emotional pain or mm-hmm. just whatever it may be. And his daughter being killed earlier in you know, they don't really give you an exact timeline, a couple right. years or something, is the whole motivation for him literally trying to calculate the universe so he can somehow create a version of his daughter. And it's interesting to me that he's like, it has to be a version of my daughter from this universe, even though it's a prediction simulation.
Right.
It's mm-hmm. like, it's so funny to me that he doesn't see the prediction simulation as like any less than the real her. Sort of like, it's sort of like, yeah. No, that's really her. And it's not good enough to have like a version of her from any universes. It's like, it's very different than Rick and Morty.
very different.
Rick and Morty, they're just like swapping out
yeah.
versions of Rick and Morty and Jerry and, like, and whatever.
They just screw up their universe at one point, and then they just like, we're going to live in this other universe now.
Yeah, they just go to another one. I mean, it's obviously a ridiculous, like, kind of version of that like theory of the multiverse theory, but it's right. it yeah that really is interesting to me that he was so like, no, like, it's just because that's kind of his philosophy. And in that, the CEO or whatever, his partner, she kind of sums it up too, where she's like, if the deterministic viewpoint is true and you prove it, then you never really had free will, and therefore you have kind of no responsibility or blame for you know speaking to his wife while she was on the phone in the car,
right,
and distracting her, that then leads to the car accident. So like, it's sort of like the whole thing is just him trying to avoid that pain
mm-hmm.
that he he never could have done anything but what he did. So he's off, you know, he can let himself off the hook.
Right. Yeah. I think there's a real sense in which he's so grief stricken by all that and so feeling so guilty that it's like there, yeah, you intellectualize it to a degree. But then he's also, it's interesting because it's like, on the one hand, he seems so committed to this is a deterministic universe, and yet he is so passionately committed to accomplishing this thing. So I guess he's, you know, you believe that you're sincerely determined to be this passionate about it. And yet ultimately there's some interesting twists and turns that are thrown his way. Particularly in the end, in the final episode, that, yeah. you know, the prediction is laid out so clearly that this is exactly what Lily's going to do, and this is how she's going to behave and what she's going to say, and then this is what's going to happen. And yet, in the end, it doesn't play out that way. And, that's where, I mean, that's always the, in some ways, like, I was waiting, like, you know, where is this going to happen? Where is this going to happen? Because it's like, at some point, it feels like something's going to have to give.
Yeah.
But I was still like genuinely surprised by how it gave and played out.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, so do we think the storytellers are genuinely saying, so we do have free will? Or did they split off and actually, was their prediction wrong and that was in a different universe?
Yeah.
And that was just not their universe?
Yeah, it's interesting because the getting the dev system to work, what, like, they use whatever the multiverse algorithm or whatever, that's what they use ultimately to get it to work.
Right.
So it's able to predict not just data from what it would consider this universe, but all possible universes. I guess that's the idea.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it work. And so it's interesting because he's looking at this prediction of what the future Lily will do, but it's also the future Lily from all possible universes, mm-hmm. I think. I think that's what happened, right? And so he's sitting her down when she finally goes there. And I mean, yeah, a lot more happens in between to get her there. Mm-hmm. Like she initially was like, she finds out that that's what they're expecting from her, that they know what she's going to do. And then she's like, well, all I have to do is avoid that. Then right. I just won't, I'll screw up their system and I'll just not go.
Right.
And that, you know, and then
that has some dire consequences.
her new boyfriend gets killed, and by the security guy who's just kind of on his own little rampage at this point.
Right.
Because he is acting in what he calls a self-interested manner, where he's worried about her not being basically a loose end in this whole thing, right. And coming back to him, because he's basically does all the dirty work himself, and not so Forrest hasn't really directly killed anybody, it seems.
Right.
But yeah, she's sitting back there, and they're watching what she's about to do. And it's just interesting because it's like, well, a minute ago, or it seems like earlier in the show, he's so untrusting of this like multiverse thing. And then he's like, this is what you're going to do. And he's totally open to it now, almost, because the dev system is working and he's looking at his daughter and it's like, there it is. I don't know. It's interesting. It's like, what? It's like, well, I don't know if he really believes in his whole determinist thing.
Right. Well, it's an interesting experiment in is there a level of confirmation bias that he's engaged in at this point, because the emotions override and it's like, well, I think I'm getting, like, you know, what I want. And then suddenly, you know, his more seemingly cold, calculating, logical side stops quite taking in the data, or is okay turning a blind eye to certain things that he was not turning a blind eye to before.
Yeah.
So he was so determined that he couldn't use that Everett interpretation. And then now that it's like, but it really it does seem to be working, then he kind of was like, nah, okay. Which is, I think, again, it speaks to maybe just the level of trauma and the underlying desire that's there. That's ultimately not a logical desire.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And I thought it was such an interesting choice at the last episode that you're seeing things that haven't happened yet. Mm-hmm. And so you're seeing it almost in this reverse order, and you're like, well, how is it going to have like drama to it when we're seeing her hold a gun up to his head and they're sitting down watching it, and she's shocked, like, wow, I hold a gun up to you? Mm-hmm. And then we're seeing her shoot him in the head.
Yeah.
And it's like, what? And he's just watching it like calmly, because in his viewpoint, even though it's almost like I don't know, it seems like he's almost, by the act of them making the dev system work, it almost seems like he disproved his own theory, but he still believes it so thoroughly that it's like, it doesn't matter what this is predicting. Like, I'm not going to choose to go against it or even try, because there's no point. There's no point in choosing to not. You know, that seems to be his viewpoint, is like, no, this is showing what's going to happen. It's all predetermined. I'm not going to move away from the tram lines, so to speak. So it's not even, he believes that so blindly, he's not willing to like fight for his life. He's right. Just like, yeah, well, this is what's going to happen.
And go ahead.
Yeah. Just that moment of like, she's wondering, well, what if I choose not to do that now? Or like, in your, as a viewer, like, yeah, like, wait, she kind of does want to kill him, but at the same time, like, she wants to prove him wrong, and, you know, she's not a murderer. And it's not until, like, he shows her that, and then he shows her up until where they lose, like, the prediction. It just goes away, and it just turns to static. And then it's not until he says the thing about devs really standing for Deus.
Right.
Where she really just looks at him differently, and then she's just like, okay, when we do this thing, like, she's just like, I am going to kill you now. Like, you have such... Because then you realize, okay, this isn't just about his daughter. Because the whole time you're like, you're confused how to feel about him. You're like, well, he's a monster. He's confused. He's kind of insane. He's also kind of brilliant, and he's doing this to be with his daughter. There's this complicated thing, and then you realize, like, oh, he's really got a god complex. Like,
right, right.
That's equally about what it's about. It's sort of like when Walter White, you know, you start to realize, well, he's not doing this for his family.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this moment of like, no, you're doing this for yourself.
Right.
You know, and I love that, because it's then suddenly she like just plays right into it, where she all the things we just saw she does, you know, up until getting in the I keep wanting to call it an elevator.
Yeah, it doesn't elevate it. It's just
no.
Just levitates. It's the levitator.
Horizontal later.
Horizontal later.
it just glides.
Yeah, it's just the levitator, I guess. Just the moving walkway kind of thing to separate them from the rest of the world. Yeah, and so what do you think he's trying to accomplish by getting killed? And how does that reunite him with his dead wife and daughter?
Because
this is a really interesting, like, you know, like, I think there's an interpretation that goes into this. But they don't give you, like, super clear answers.
It seems like, because of what happens where he actually ends up, I mean, this is confusing in a lot of levels, but he does end up in the dev system. But he's surprised by it. Yeah. When it happens, he's like, what's going on? So... He turns to his partner too, and he says, "Everything's gonna be okay." When they're initially opening the little tram thing, and she's like, "I don't know why you say that." Even though, and they've watched each other say these things over and over. Yeah, and he's like almost like peacefully going into his death, and he really does have the Messiah complex that they keep bringing up, where, you know. He says, like, you know, the thing about messiahs, they always resurrect. I'm like, yeah, like, what does he mean? Does he know that he's going to basically be like reborn into the system? Does he know that somehow?
Right.
I don't know, because it doesn't seem like he does. It seems like she did that, like, by like backing up all the data. She like makes a version of him. And he's like shocked by it. Maybe he was planning on it, and he was just like, you know, just reacting to being in a simulation. Like, that would be pretty shocking to, you know. And I don't know. I really don't know. There's a few things that I'm still kind of like, wait, what? Like, like, there's, you know, there's a lot of it that I love how they sort of put it all together. But yeah, that's one thing I'm sort of like, why was he so calm? And is it just that he is like, well, this is what happens. There's no point in fighting it, because he's so deep into that worldview that even if he watches himself make a choice, he doesn't act in that present moment. And I mean, he says it, he's like, right now it doesn't feel as if I'm reciting lines. I'm just saying what I'm feeling like I should say in this moment. And it's like, yeah, I mean, none of us really know what it's like to watch yourself in the future. And then you get to that moment, and it's like, you would expect that you would do everything in your power to like choose something different. But before you know it, you're saying exactly the same thing you already saw yourself say, and you're like, oh, well, I guess. You know, it's like,
could I choose otherwise?
Like, yeah. Ah, like makes you go crazy.
Right.
But it's so satisfying when she makes the choice that to not shoot him, and she tosses the gun, and as the doors close, it's such a good moment where you're just like, oh, like you just blew their mind. They're both just like, wait, we have not seen this. We have not seen this happen. We did not predict this, which is not what they're used to. And yeah. Finally, they start acting like not so calm and collected. They're just freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's the other thing that's interesting is she fires the gun and then the thing falls, right? You see that in the sort of playback of the future,
mm-hmm.
or the prediction. And then she doesn't shoot him. They go across. It falls anyway.
Yeah.
Because that dude is there.
Who's, or whatever, yeah.
Stewart is like trying to basically make sure that Devs doesn't see the light of day. He slowly is that he's so brilliant, like slowly just like getting, you know, further and further away from the project and realizing how like messed up it really is.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's interesting because it's like, well, was he actually the one to do it both times where he disables the electromagnetic field that makes it actually move across? You know, like, would he have done that either way?
It's right.
Like, maybe it wasn't the gun who set it off, that set it off the first time they see it.
Right. Yeah. We don't have maybe don't have a clear answer on that. Yeah, the thing that intrigues me about that whole, how that all of that plays out in the end, and even Forrest's God complex and his whole talk about it being resurrected and all of that, I get the sense that there is, like, he understands that he has to die here for his backup to be manifest in a different iteration of,
yeah.
of this reality, where then he also has his wife and daughter.
And you would expect that would be the goal from the beginning. Cause yeah. it's like, you is all this work really just so you can look at her on a screen?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. So I got the sense at the end that he was kind of understanding that, but then when things don't go exactly according to his plan, he's like, kind of thrown off by that. But I think that it comes back to that denial of multiverse as a possibility, as an option. And so him not quite being willing to go there. But I think what's intriguing about it to me, the interpretation that I kind of got out of it as I watched the whole series kind of unfold, was the notion that actually, and this actually goes back to an episode where I was discussing the Matrix with my friend Andy, about this idea of how do we know that we're in reality versus a simulation? And then if you can get to a point where you are, it's quite likely that you're in a simulation, what's the chances are that you're at the first layer of the simulation and not down deep? Well, how do we know we're not a simulation of a simulation of a simulation, you know, like multiple layers in, as it were, of the Matrix? And that's where I started getting really intrigued. It started messing with my head with Devs, is that my suspicion is we're well in to Devs within Devs within Devs within Devs in terms of this supercomputer that, you know, because at one point they even make a reference to the idea that this thing, like, essentially mapping itself and then being able to, like, understand itself and recreate itself. So then there's just
They're just the backup. The whole thing we watched is just the backup. Just the backup.
Yeah.
I'm glad they didn't do that as an obvious sort of twist.
Yeah.
At the end, but not that it would have been obvious the whole time, just as a storyline.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely like a possibility within that kind of universe.
Well, the reason I think it's fascinating is because what I think was fascinating about that notion is I think that maybe the Everett interpretation of the multiverse ends up working with the dev system because the dev system stops just trying to work within its single parameter and starts understanding all the other potential dev systems that are being created in all these other simulations and then is able to extrapolate from that. So it's an interesting idea of like, it's a different take on multiverse at that point, because it's not so much multiverse as we have understood it, like as we think of it, but it's multiverse just within devs itself. And unpacking that so that then we kind of enter into this next level somewhere in there in devs later after the events of that surprise forest at the end there.
Yeah, I almost think that that's what Alex Garland was going for in a way. Mm-hmm. I think you're right there. Because I don't think that, I don't know, but I heard him say on a podcast once that he does tend to think that things are deterministic. He's never said, you know, straight out that I don't believe in the multiverse or anything like that. But mm-hmm. it seems like within the confines of the show, the multiverse theory works really well with as a system, if you're creating, you know, literal particle by particle and digitizing it, it's like, then it'll work, you know, not necessarily to tell you that this is how things are, but that this is how things can be mm-hmm. within the system. And this is how a system will work like seamlessly. But then it almost seems like determinism is still almost not disproven or anything.
Right.
You know, at the same time. And that's what's so fascinating about Forrest as a character, is because you almost can't argue with him in some way. You know, when he makes that first argument, you're just like, huh. You're like, yeah, and I tend to think that things are that way, but that if you really could see your future, then it would almost, you know, it would almost just become a paradox.
Right. Yeah.
And the whole cause and effect argument of like, well, you don't have a free will because everything has a cause and effect and everything has a reason, even though everything doesn't have a good reason, which I love that conversation. I love that, right. That idea. You know, because you know, growing up, you can hear that everything happens for a reason thing. And it's like, it's more that idea tends to more be like, well, things will have some sort of end moral good over time mm-hmm. or whatever, you know, and it's just like, well, some things don't
right.
seem to. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that whole conversation of like, I didn't say everything happens for a good reason. Everything has a cause and effect sort of thing. But that's in my mind doesn't necessarily take away from what they call the illusion of free will. That doesn't necessarily mean you aren't free in the present moment mm-hmm. to make your own decisions within the context of that illusion, you know?
Right.
That tends to be how I think about it, where it's like, yeah, you're in the confines of all of these other causes that have brought you to where you are and all things that you couldn't have controlled ever. But that doesn't make you any less free, even if it is an illusion, to make those decisions. And that seems to be sort of a message, I guess, of the show.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
I don't know. That's kind of the stuff I ended up thinking about at least while watching it. And that's kind of the conclusion I came to, where I'm like, I don't know if this is what he's trying to say, but this is what I got out of it.
I mean, it's certainly one that invites a lot of like revisiting, and like there's more to contemplate there in the because there's definitely more than we're even unpacking here in terms of the interactions of the various characters and the discussions of like free
so
will.
Much.
Yeah, you know, like on the bridge there, that the dam, you know, did she push the kid? like we don't know. We don't see these things, but But there's like part of me that's like, maybe.
I don't think she did. I think she saw it happen over and over, and she knew that every time he does this, because they show that those shots where you're seeing things happen multiple times, and there's multiple people within the shot that represent kind of, I guess, the different possibilities of what they could be doing in multiple universes or whatever. If things were just slightly different in a different like time zone or timeline, and every single one that you're seeing of the kid, he's falling.
Yeah.
You don't see anywhere he makes it, you know, and so they show it, him falling over and over and over. And then you're almost thinking, okay, they're showing the possibility of him falling in other universes, 'cause they've repeated this shot idea a bunch of times. And I get that sort of, you're supposed to be thinking about that concept, and then he falls and she's just standing there, and you're not sure in that shot, like, well, did she push him? Mm-hmm. But it's like, there's no difference, because she said she's watched it over and over and over, and I'm not going to tell you if you fall.
Yeah.
She's like, I've watched this over and over and over, and I never tell you whether or not you fall. And the kid's so willing to get back into devs that he's willing to risk it.
Right.
Which is crazy. So crazy. He loves it. He's like, it's a perfect circle. He's like so obsessed with the idea of it. I'm like, what are you, crazy dude? You're like, you're gonna risk it. Like, not worth it. Like, you're gonna trust her?
All right.
Like, come on. Are you kidding?
Well, that's part of, I guess, and maybe this is like the real like cynical side of me. I'm like, maybe she, you know, that's what we're seeing there in all these other universes, is to a degree, like, somehow her like killing him in every single universe.
But yeah,
it's a dark interpretation.
Well, in a way, it's her killing him in every single universe, because he falls and she lets him every single time.
Yeah,
and she tells him the same thing, and she doesn't do anything to stop herself, because you know it is already done in a sense. There's some really poetic moments like that are sort of vague. That I really like, that's why it's also a really rewatchable show, because there are some really shocking, intense, visceral moments, and then there's these really weird poetic sort of slow motion things that almost kind of fade. They did in my memory, at least, where I'm like, yeah, I saw this like last year. I mean, granted, a lot happened last year, but like, right, it was like the middle of last year. It wasn't that long ago.
Hmm. Yeah, because it's rewatching, came out 2020. So it's like just last year it came out.
April or March or something. And I'm like, it's been about a year and I'm rewatching it. And I actually couldn't remember if he fell. I'm like watching it and I'm like, I literally don't remember what happened. And it was messing with me, because I'm like, I've watched this show before. And then you see him fall, and I'm like, oh, and it like all comes back to me. And I was just like, I was kind of reliving like the dramatic moments or whatever. The things I remembered were definitely the bag over the head in the beginning, because that's not done in a poetic way. It's done in a visceral, and a lot of it is just the sound design and like everything, like, which I think the sound design and music is probably like some of the best I've ever seen or heard. It just is so fitting.
Yeah.
And they know when to make things really dreamy and when to make things like just super horrifying and intense. And like, sometimes it's not even music. It's just that pulsating, you know,
the thrumming kind of.
that rumbling synthy sound. I can't get enough of that. I love that. And it's always in like the most horrific moments. You're just like, oh, it's so intense. It's so crazy.
Puts you on edge, for sure.
Yeah. Sorry, I forgot what I was saying.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like, I think that's fascinating. Like, you forgot whether he falls or not on the rewatch. It's almost like you being in devs and having seen it.
That's why it was like tripping me out. I was like, what's happening?
Like, you've seen it happen already, and yet you're like experiencing it for the first time.
Oh my gosh, I know. It's like, here I am thinking initially like, oh, how could you ever not like deviate from the tram lines kind of thing. And here I am, like, I've already watched this and it's still it's new to me. Like, what's going on? It's crazy.
See, you're just living out devs. That's all that's happening.
Do you tend to think the universe is deterministic? Do you believe in the multiverse?
I mean, yeah, it's a complicated answer, that's for sure.
Yeah, I know. It's a complicated question. I don't even know if it's worth answering. But
I mean, it's definitely
fun to think about.
It's fun to think about, for sure. And I think it's worth answering to some degree. I think there, you know, I'm certainly no physicist, no quantum physicist. I'm just a sci-fi nerd who, you know, likes to look into this stuff. But the best I've been able to tell from, like, reading and like trying to dive into some of the research and just kind of keeping up with what scientific consensus seems to be, there does seem to be some very good reasons to think that there is, you know, multiverse theory is not inconsistent with quantum physics as we understand it, with relativity theory as we understand it. And so it's not only not inconsistent, it actually helps explain certain things. You know, when we have these weird things where we, you know, send a single particle through, you know, two slots and it, you know, we have this problem where light behaves like both a particle and a wave, and then we end up being able to measure it going through both slots. Well, how is it doing this? So all these things, like, just start blowing your mind if you're not, you know, a physics PhD, that point towards the universe potentially having this far more, like, split out understanding or manifestation. So the multiverse seems like an intriguing possibility. As for free will, like, are we in a deterministic universe? You know, it's something I've wrestled with a lot over my life. And you know, I did my undergraduate actually in philosophy, and you know, I did liberal studies and philosophy, sort of crammed 2 degrees into 4 years and got out of there. Never looked back. But, like, that, you know, that was something I wrestled with a lot, particularly when, like, studying metaphysics. I remember writing a paper for my metaphysics class, where I brought in chaos theory as sort of an interpretation of how do we then handle what seems to be a very complex world and all the little factors that are tweaking and changing the path that we potentially go down and how we're even able to make choices. And I ended up arguing that we have a lot less free will than we initially would recognize, you know?
Yeah.
And since then, I've even evaluated that even further. And I would go so far, and this, like, I get funny looks from people when I sort of express this. I think we do have free will, but as I've gotten to understand human psychology, I've gotten a better understanding of neuroscience and how reactive we are to the moment, and then how good, like, how much our brains are just wired to post-rationalize and apply a narrative to choices we just make in the moment, and then apply that. It's like, well, I made that choice for this reason, and, you know, and then we rationalize our way into, I made that choice, not just I reacted, you know. And understanding just how much we are creatures of habit, that by and large, I think we do have free will. I think we probably, most of us, if we're being really honest and really self-aware, most of us probably only really exercise our free will 1, 2, maybe 3 times in our lives.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And I think that's where probably the people who have the best upper hand or the best chance of exercising their free will most often are the most mindful among us. The ones that are like really digging down deep, being very centered, and actually being able to separate their emotions and separate the situation themselves from the situation around them, and be able to actually look at things and go, okay, actually, I'm going to make this choice. And it's not just I reacted and now I'm going to post-rationalize and make it like, yeah, I made this choice for these reasons, make up a narrative for why I made that choice. And so that's my suspicion. We have it. We do not use our free will nearly the amount that we like to think we do.
Yeah, because it's hard work. It's hard work to deconstruct our lives, because we're just born and we're not overthinking these things usually at a super young age, and then we just find ourselves sort of a byproduct of whatever we were born into, and thinking we're making decisions, and it's like you said, being so mindful that you are almost finding what your actual identity is versus, apart from all those things that then kind of allow you to sort of really make a decision. Your real true identity, your true self, sort of separate from all those things, but being fully aware of them and making a decision from that place. And yeah, I mean, I don't even know if I've ever done that. Right. I'm thinking about it. I'm like, I think there's probably have been a few times in my life where, it's almost like you astral project a bit. You're like, I'm not my body. I'm not my brain. Mm-hmm. If I'm a soul, I'm not rationalizing with my soul, right? Or am I? Am I making a decision spiritually or intellectually, and is that being influenced by all these other factors that I really had no, I had no say in?
Right. Yeah. All these things that are outside of our realm of control to start with.
But I feel like that's why it's so important to get to that place, because that's really the only insight. Well, otherwise you are just a default. You might as well be a computer program, and you're just the default existence, which I feel like it's easy to fall into, especially these days.
Oh, for sure.
I think about this stuff a lot where, I feel like I've probably said this, I might have even said this to you before, of how, there's just enough, going on these days that you can kind of not do that sort of, not really detaching, just finding sort of your true self, your true identity, or even think about these kind of questions that we're talking about. There's enough going on in life. There's enough shows to watch, and there's enough movies, and there's enough distractions, and there's enough like content to consume and media and whatever. It's like you can just exist,
right?
Like basically, keep yourself occupied,
right?
Until you die. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if, and so that, I feel like that's the big thing with technology, that is like, it's not that technology is evil. It's just that it can, if you're a certain type of person, especially if you just want to just detach, mm-hmm. you can just sort of entertain yourself to death.
Oh yeah.
Yep. Or just not even entertain, just,
occupy yourself. Something
in front of your face.
Yeah.
And just occupy your brain and not really like,
yeah.
Back in the day, so you'd sit by a tree and think of like, what's going on here? you'd ponder your life, not just like it in the context of on a national global level. Right.
Yeah.
Constantly. We're always doing that.
So. All right.
Our minds can't handle it.
Yeah.
Like our brains have not evolved enough yet. A friend of mine and I were talking about this recently. It's like, it's only been a little while that we've been so plugged in to everything that's going on all the time. And like the byproduct of it is so, seems to be really negative. And it's like, then you have extremists being like, well, you know, it's technology's fault. It's like, well, it's our relationship to it. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's what this, like, Alex Garland is so good at telling stories that give you a little bit of a warning from playing out a scenario to its nth degree. Sort of like Black Mirror. I think Black Mirror is probably the most extreme, heavy-handed versions of that. Where it's like, it almost seems like someone shaking their finger at you. It's like, you better not let this happen. Yeah, it just feels like a little more elegant.
Yeah.
Which I like.
That's a good comparison. That's a good comparison, though. Yeah. Maybe a little more elegant, but also a little more, you know, and this is, I think, what I like about devs so much. Not that I don't like Black Mirror, but.
I know. I like Black Mirror, too. Right. I'm not dissing it.
But, yeah, there's something about the way devs presents all of this in a, that well, it reminds me of, like, one of my favorite directors is Terrence Malick. And he makes these movies that, you know, like Thin Red Line, The Tree of Life, that demand this kind of engagement where you've really got to like put yourself in there. It is an act of meditation in a way to watch his movies. And you have to, like, you have to do some work, you know, like it's not mind off, like just, laugh or see a sappy good story and have a good cry and move on. You have to like really invest. And I got that from devs as well. It's like, you gotta do some work. Like there's a meet me halfway kind of sense of what Garland's doing there. That is, I'm going to try to tell you something really interesting. I'm going to make something interesting, but I'm also like there's a sense of respect, mutual respect. Like,
yeah,
he understands that, hey, actually, the audience isn't an idiot. You know?
Yeah.
And, like, I'm going to give you some benefit here. I'm going to assume that you're fairly thoughtful. So I'm going to try to make this interesting, engaging, and, like, suspenseful. But I'm also not going to end up then wrapping it all up in a cute bow for you in the way that I feel like most TV shows or movies would be prone to doing for fear of, oh no, loose strings, plot holes and stuff. Like you got to like tie it all up for us and people are going to be frustrated, you know, when in reality it's like, and maybe some people are, I'm sure, like probably go read some reviews and like, oh yeah, these people like probably totally frustrated with it. But from my perspective, I'm like, this is the stuff I'm going to come back and really rewatch.
Yeah.
Because it's like, there's more there. There's more layers I can like dive into. And you're rewarded as an audience member by watching it wide awake, like really soaking it in. And you're rewarded when you rewatch it, as you've been talking about, you know, like you come back and there's actually something new that's uncovered.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I think some of it definitely gets tied up at the end, where more emotionally, I think, where, you know, she kind of accepts that she's in the simulation a little bit and finds Jamie, and it's weird that Forrest kind of gets what he wanted.
Yeah.
And you're not. And I love that because you're not sure how to feel.
Yes.
And you're almost happy for him. But at the same time, it's like the beauty of it is like, yeah, you got what you wanted. But you and Lily are going to know for the rest of your simulated lives that this isn't real. That you're basically, it's like being trapped in the Matrix. And there's no point in telling anyone because they're just going to think you're nuts.
Right.
And there's no getting out of it.
So
it's not like there's any waking up.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's like a fascinating question too that occurred to me on watching it, is like, is there a sense in which the ending, like, it gives us this nice, like you said, emotionally we feel like, ah, okay, like it's satisfying in that sense. Yeah. But is there a sense in which they created their own hell?
Right. Well, and it's And the thing I didn't exactly pick up the first time I watched, or maybe I forgot, but where he's giving that same speech, and then he goes, "Relax, this is one of the good ones." And during the speech, the lighting's changing and the angle's changing, and you're realizing this is him and all these other universes giving her the exact same speech. Mm-hmm. And so there's all these infinite digital universes that they're trapped in now.
Yeah.
But their consciousness is only can obviously only exist one at a time we're given as a viewer of a little sample. And he's like, "This is one of the good ones." And he says, like, some of them are not going to be that great.
Yeah.
Or I forgot the way he puts it, but it's like some of them are going to be like hell. And it's like, wow, but that was worth it in order to somehow exist in. It's like, is your consciousness just as much alive in all of them?
Right.
You know, and they're like, are you aware of that somehow? If it's like a digital conscious, like, it's just so interesting. And like, they kind of just try to simplify that really quickly for you as a viewer and just be like, well, they just exist in this one. Mm-hmm. And don't worry about those other ones, but just they know that they're there, but it's they're in this one, and it's like a paradise. But there is sort of that eerie paradise where you're like,
Well, you know, and that's what's fascinating about it is, like, I feel like he is trying to comfort himself with that notion and overlook that. But there's a sense in which it is what it's doubly eerie because there's like, yeah, like you said, they know. And no one will ever believe them. So,
good. Yeah, there's no point in saying anything.
Yeah, good luck, you know, kind of living with that. How long can you sort of deal with that understanding? And two,
he's like, you get used to it.
Yeah, you get used to it, yeah. And then the flip side of that is like, yeah, so that's great. You're lucky to be, I guess, in one of the good ones. But what about all the other iterations of your existence that are in these other like terrible existence? I mean, back to Rick and Morty, right? Like when Morty is using the little reset button, and it turns out actually he's like killing himself and all these other universes in this like horrible way.
Where he's like using like little time machine.
Yeah, it's like he can set the little parameter and like and then reset, you know.
Yeah,
but really he's just jumping universes. He doesn't realize it. He doesn't bother getting explanation from Rick on how this thing works.
And then it
says like this, like, what's your moral responsibility to the rest of those Mortys? And there's a little bit of that going on at the end of like, wow, like, but what about those other hellish existences for those people? And then it, I guess, raises the question of if you ever do exercise your free will and multiverse is real, and you make a choice, maybe a good choice here, but then you're like, yeah, what about the me that made a terrible choice? I guess, like, he deserved it? I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't stay up all night thinking about that.
I know. I honestly think that Stewart's, like, voiceover of, like, the poem, that, like, sums up everything, like, So I think it's like a Yeats poem or something.
Yeah.
And it's where it just basically talks about like humans being like so afraid of death.
Mm-hmm.
And how simple it really is if we try to break it down, where it's just like not having something to think about, not thinking, not existing. It's like that's like the number one fear that motivates all these other, you know, crazy things. But
which, you know, is interesting in and of itself too, back to the question of like, do we have free will and all of that, and our brains, are we evolved enough to like handle the world that we're living in? Because, you know, the more I've dove in, that's not even a word, the more I dive into neuroscience, the more it's clear that like the vast majority of the wiring of our brains is all around survival and keeping us alive. And so deliberately, like so much of what we're doing is about safeguarding that. And so that we're even, you know, we're wired to fear death in that sense, because it's about, we got to make sure we keep existing. You know, so take away that like safeguard, and then it's like, oh, well, we'll take all kinds of crazy risks, right? And I mean, and that's called adolescence for most people. I remember having, you know, virtually no sense of my own mortality.
Yeah, for sure.
That goes away after a while.
I feel like there's probably a healthy balance to have. It's like, we don't want to be so obsessed with this life that we like try to make a digital simulated version of it and plug ourselves in to try to virtually live forever. Might happen in our lifetime. I doubt it. But we also, it's like, we don't want to be so afraid of death that we'd go that far, but also don't want to be in the other end of the spectrum.
Right. So recklessly disconnected from death that, you know, it's like, I'll just, I can climb on the roof of my house without a safety harness or a, or a proper ladder.
I've definitely done that.
I was going to, and then I thought better of it. And because of that, see, in this universe, I'm still here, and I, with the use of all of my limbs. I don't know about every other universe.
Your rational respect of possibly dying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one makes sense. That one kept me, you know, a little more grounded.
Yeah.
So,
well, yeah.
Question I have for you. Now that, you know, you got me to watch Devs, definitely really enjoyed it. Fascinating. And there's just like all these questions to unpack from it, which is what I'm all about. This is the kind of like thoughtful science fiction that's asking these big questions, especially as quantum computing and a lot of just powerful technology is just really right around the corner from us. I love being able to unpack these things. And so now my question for you is, have you seen an anime series called Serial Experiments Lane?
Serial Experiments Lane? No.
Yeah. No, it's like, it's a little blast from the past. It's like, let's say it's going to be 90s. I think it was 90s. And it's kind of a mini series kind of setting as well.
Nice.
It was a kind of an inspiration for The Matrix in some ways. And watching Devs, there's definitely some key ways that in the atmosphere, the pacing, and even just how it's messing with reality, in which I'm like, I feel like Garland probably watched Serial Experiments Lane.
Okay.
So if you can dig that up, that could be interesting. And a fascinating follow-up to this is like, how does Devs and Serial Experiments Lane line up?
Oh yeah, I would love to watch that. I really, really like I don't want to say all anime, but anime from like the 80s, 90s that was more like space travel, sci-fi driven. I went through a phase where I just watched a bunch of stuff like that. And I started a movie called Memories the other night. And it just is like three different stories that all kind of, I guess, have a similar theme. And I just watched the first one before bed. And that, ironically, was kind of like a dev sort of exploration. Like it was these two guys that end up kind of exploring this space station. And the space station is sort of filled with, is kind of just like the leftover computer of this like crazy rich royalty that is like is projecting all these like simulated memories that she had from her life that they kind of like are experiencing. And at first they're like, oh, this is real. Oh wait, no, this is simulated. And like it's really bizarre. And it's, some of it reminded me actually of Dev. So yeah, and I really like I'm pretty sure that was done by the guy who did Akira or Akita. Mm. And I really like that movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. There was another show. Well, obviously, you know, Cowboy Bebop was great. Yes. Man, that's not as interdimensional and stuff. It's just fun.
But, yeah.
Serial.
Serial Experiments Lane.
Experiments Lane. What a name.
Right?
All right, I'll check that out. And you said it's like a miniseries? So there's
like trying to remember, I don't remember exactly how many episodes, but it's like maybe 12 episodes or something like that. Or 8 episodes, perfect. Something like, yeah. And it just, it has its arc, it has its story, and you follow in this girl who, you know, is kind of unpacking this weird, it's like her dad is into some weird computer stuff, and then she's like trying to sort of unpack it, sort of figure out what's going on there. So it's one I should revisit. A little known fact that, I don't think anyone will ever pick up on, because there's just probably not enough like anime nerds out there. I haven't run across enough of them in my exposure or in terms of like my readership for my novels. But one of the characters in Sleepwalker is named after character in Lane.
Nice.
That's my sort of homage to nod to that as an influence.
Okay, so it was like a big influence for you then.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice. Are you big on anime, or is it just like sci-fi anime?
I've watched a decent amount of anime, but I've fallen off in the last several years. I haven't kind of kept up with it. But like I've definitely have a affinity for, you know, certain Miyazaki titles, especially like Princess Mononoke. It's just just a favorite of just any genre. Just such it's a beautiful so good. Film.
Yeah,
I saw
it's such a beautiful. It's such a rare story.
It is.
Sorry.
Oh no, it's fine.
Well, just like to have that even like geared even towards kids, but you don't really have a clear protagonist and antagonist. Like just that's kind of. Storytelling is so cool.
Yes,
like just for that I don't know, that's that type of sort of kid story, like I had never seen anything like that when I first saw it.
Yeah,
but no, sorry, beautiful. What were you gonna say?
I was just gonna say that on Instagram I saw a beautiful artistic rendition somebody made of basically it was what do they call it, Mononoke 2085 or something like that. It was a very cyberpunk version of Princess Mononoke. It was pretty awesome.
Sweet.
It was like beautiful.
Dude, next we should watch and talk about Dune.
Yes. You want to do
it? I've never seen the original Dune.
Yeah.
I've never David Lynch. Read any of the books. Mm-hmm. I know nothing about it really, but I do really like Denis Villeneuve.
Villeneuve.
Mm-hmm. And I really liked Blade Runner 2049.
Right.
And it just looks like epic. Mm-hmm. It just looks cool.
Yeah, and that, it's, I mean, when's it going to come out? They delayed it.
Never.
Yeah, right. So.
Because they're going to lose so much. There's no way they're making that money back.
Yeah.
Like, that looks like it was like an actual...
A lot of money.
Like, big budget movie. Those movies, man, they're just... it's rough.
Mm-hmm.
I watched Nomadland the other night, and that is, like, the perfect kind of straight-to-streaming movie, because you know it had, like, a low budget, and people, it's like, they can just... buy it up. But those movies that are like really relying on theaters that were like big names, it's like, man,
yeah,
one that era might be over for a while, I'm fine with. It's like I like smaller films for the most part anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's nice when you can have the canvas and the ability to do some big ones that, you know, because it takes a certain budget to be able to do Arrival, So speaking of Denis Villeneuve, right?
Right. And that's why I'm like excited about Dune.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, that might be like one of the last crazy, really good, you know, special effects heavy films
that
they do in a while. But I mean, I'm probably wrong about that, but.
Yeah, like, I still like their superhero movies, but.
Yeah.
Those are still coming fast and furious to at us. No pun intended.
Yeah. Well, what's next? Like, what's next for superhero movies? I don't know. I don't even know.
There's Natalie Portman taking over Thor. So based on there's a run. I'm actually really intrigued by this. And this is really hard to getting out there and getting nerding out. But there was a few years ago, there was a really successful run of comics within Marvel where basically was it Jane Foster or whatever, the Natalie Portman's character that she plays in the movies, but she's, you know, character in the comics, she takes over. Basically, she ends up being worthy of wielding the hammer and gets the powers and like takes over as Thor. And Thor has this like big like identity crisis thing, and like it was really well received as a comic. And so they decided, you know, Marvel said like, wow, like the fan response was actually really good. So yeah, we'll give it tries in the movies. And I have a very like mixed, I haven't watched every Marvel movie. There's definitely ones I like and then some that I just can't get around to watching. But that one, I'm like, I'm intrigued. I'm like, okay, I'll give you a shot. Like, you know.
Yeah, usually my deal is with those movies is like, I'll watch it.
The expectation's not like crazy high, you know, for most of them.
There's been a few that I've been like, I legitimately really like this movie. And then there's been most of them where I kind of shrug and I forget it. And then there's only been a few on top of that I've been like just straight up strongly disliked. Usually I'm like, I felt like the first Guardians of the Galaxy was fun. I enjoyed that a lot. But it could just be the oversaturation too. It could just be that it's like you're bombarded with Marvel film after Marvel film after, you know, and you're just like, how many of these characters am I supposed to care about? And it's like, right. Avengers movie. And it's like, it's like, there's another remake of this, and like the, you know, it could just be that, like, just you just get kind of fatigued.
Yeah.
Because I remember, I mean, the original X-Men when it came out, when I was 10 years old, was like a phenomenon. It was like, wow, they're doing a comic book film that is gritty and realistic, and they're embracing the darker kind of like grounded elements a little bit. And that was so special when it came out, you know, and then a lot of them just started to all feel the same.
Yeah.
You know, but that was also special because it was like, that's a unique idea. But it's like, well, it was successful. And then they, you know, like, it's not, it, I mean, it's it, that idea, I guess, has been around for a long time. Just like make a superhero movie, like just for the big screen and do it slightly different. But I feel like having it have that sort of almost realistic vibe was like, you know, it wasn't so playful.
Right.
You know, that kind of grounded it.
Yeah. Cause it was a departure from the Batman days of,
wham, pow.
Yeah. Well, cause and even, you know, the, Tim Burton Batman was still very,
that's true, yeah.
And unrealistic, you know, it was still kind of cartoony, and Gotham felt like this unreal set. And, you know, it was like done purposefully, but it was still kind of comical or comic book-esque in that sense. But
yeah. Which is super cool for sure. But yeah, it's just a different thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, we're really getting off, going off on a tangent. I guess we don't have anything else to address.
There's so much more. Devs, huh? Yeah, there's so much more we could
there's,
say.
But it's
one that, like, it's probably worth a revisit at some point and unpack even further. But who knows? It's like a deep well.
I know it. I really thought I was just gonna watch the first and last episode, and I just got sucked into the world again. Oh, it's so good. I mean, even just the cinematography and visuals of it just has, like, it just really has, like, a magical, memorable thing. Like, there's the thing about the just those lights around the tree.
Yeah.
The tree, like, on the way to Dev's, and then just him kind of standing underneath it and just, like, making a halo. And then they do this thing with Lily later, and they're the two kind of reborn characters. There's just so many, like, visual cues to things like that where it's just brilliant, you know. Just has that, you know, if there's something that you can just do something very simple like that and make it stand out and stick in your mind and, like, super, super memorable, that's just, like, good visual storytelling.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
If I had any criticisms about Devs watching it the second time, I didn't notice it the first time. There wasn't really, like, a super kind of, I don't know, like, like, a character to sort of, like, relate to fully, like, that was, like, more of a quirky average human kind of person that, like, spoke in a very kind of, like, candid, naturalistic way. Like, everyone was very hyper intelligent and, like, dialed in and, like, thoughtful and was patient in the ways that they spoke. Like, like, Jamie was almost that character, mm-hmm. where he was, like, a little more canon, just, like, you would just say things more blunt and it just felt more realistic. But some of the dialogue just felt so almost, like, too, like, thought out, mm-hmm. where I'm like, is this really how people talk? Like, they're a very specific type of people that are in this kind of world. And so I kind of forgive it for that. Right. But, like, that's part of what I love about Ex Machina. There's so few characters, and Oscar Isaac's character is just, he's like a super genius, but then he's so grounded in, like, the way he behaves is so, like, naturalistic, and, like, his dialogue feels, like, very convincing and grounded, and he's not really trying to, you know, show off any sense of, like, intellect. He's trying to, like, connect emotionally and, like, in casually.
Yeah.
And there's something about feels like pulls you in. And I was sort of missing something like that, where I was like, I almost want some character to just be like, what the fuck's going on? You know, just like,
you're right.
To just be like, you're almost envisioning yourself there. You're like, I would not be this comp.
Right.
You know, like, there's just so many instances right now. Like, yeah. Or just like the way they're asking questions or anything. And like that, even that first, like, Jamie and Lily are sitting down, and it's like they haven't seen each other in forever, and they're both so like kind of like patient with each other, and like I'm like, is this really what someone would act like in this situation? Like, wouldn't you be like flipping out? Like, there's just like something about that where everyone was just very, very, very intelligent and patient, mm-hmm. and like thoughtful, and that's kind of like a minor criticism, just because I love rambling dialogue. Like, I love, like, that type of, like, I'm a big Coen Brothers, Richard Linklater fan. Like, mm-hmm. I love Jim Jarmusch and Quentin Tarantino, like, those characters that just kind of, they don't need to do anything expository. They just like to, you explore their, like, character through dialogue and, like, the way they I don't know. That was the only thing I was sort of, I felt like I was missing. The homeless guy who ends up being the Russian spy almost is that, mm-hmm. but it's like all back, you know,
right? But. Yeah, which is a fascinating, like, I was always like, this guy, there's something up with this guy, because he's a little too important.
They keep showing him. Right. Yeah, he's in like almost every episode. You're like, why are they showing him again?
Right. Yeah. He's gonna come in to play. Okay. This. Yeah.
Because it wouldn't make any sense if he just came out of nowhere and kills Kent.
Yeah. Right. a very fascinating watch, highly enjoyable, so I'm glad you recommended that. I check it out.
I'm glad we got to talk about it.
Yeah, that's really cool. And, you know, it's, I hope to see more sci-fi like that. And and you mentioned Ex Machina. I'm a big fan of Ex Machina. That's its own, like, worthwhile episode to unpack there as well.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe we'll have to have you back to talk about that sometime.
I'd love to, man.
Awesome. Well, Mike, thanks so much for coming on the episode. Any recommendations on something fun you've been checking out that you think listeners should give a shot?
As far as a show or a movie?
Show, movie, book?
Well, I've been going crazy on the Criterion Channel.
Oh.
So I started the Criterion Channel and I've been really enjoying diving into a lot of 1960s movies, especially Japanese cinema, Ozu, stuff by him, and a lot of Fellini. He did like 8 and a half, which people talk about, but he did all these other movies that are just really kind of magical. And I didn't really go to film school, and so I'm sort of giving myself film school. So I just recommend getting the Criterion Channel and like diving headfirst.
Nice.
And watching, you know, some Fellini, and watching some Terrence Malick's on there. And it's cool because some of it is the Criterion Collection movies, and some of it is just, you know, old movies that you are just hard to find. You know,
right?
So that's something that's been really fun. I found because you can get lost on Amazon or Netflix or Hulu and just be like, I don't know if this is going to be good or what. At least with Criterion, it's like, you know, it's at least like somewhat curated to be either culturally important or just like a classic of some kind. And there's a lot of things I realized that I had never heard of.
right. Because, I mean, that's so, the canon is big, as it were.
Yeah.
And so, no, that's good. Yeah, I have run across, you know, the Criterion Channel at some points, but I haven't ever, like, subscribed or, like, really gone in and checked that out. So, that's good. That's a good recommendation.
As far as a streaming service, I'm like, I'm loving it because, you just kind of forget, like, oh, what's another like $9 a month or $10, whatever. And it's like, if I'm going to do that, it's like, I'm going to, you know, kind of want to invest.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
It's not just the bucks. It's the time too, right? Like, why not dive into something like kind of cool and like stretch yourself a little bit.
Yeah. It's not like every single thing I've watched on there has been amazing or blown my mind, but it's at least been like, you know, thought provoking. And
mm-hmm.
I usually need something just kind of like nonsense too. Like, I've been watching What We Do in the Shadows, the show. That's kind of just like a funny, like, goofy show. I need something like that.
Oh, and then absolutely. I also
like more of my like, deeper, maybe thought provoking or sort of film school, watches. A movie recommendation I could say that might be an interesting follow-up to Devs is Terry Gilliam's 1985 Brazil.
Ah, yes.
If you've not seen that.
It's been a long time, actually.
Just a very
different type of... I used to live in Brazil.
Really? It's a very different type of warning. Like I feel like Devs is a certain technological warning, and Brazil is almost like a totalitarian government warning of like dystopia.
Yep.
You know, and that's one of my favorites. I love that movie.
Yes. Awesome.
So,
well, great. Thank you so much, Mike.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Appreciate you taking time to do this.
For sure.
And,
thanks for having me.
Yeah. Any, can we check out anything that you've been doing lately?
Well, Votery has a podcast,
yeah,
which we'd love to have you on again. So Votery podcast is on Spotify and YouTube and I think iTunes and other places. So we're getting back into doing that on a more regular basis. I don't really use social media very much anymore. I'm working on an album that hopefully I'll have more updates soon.
Sweet.
On social media. And yeah, I mean, other than that, you know, could send me an email, mike@votaryfilms.com.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
All right.
And I'm sure we will be talking soon.
Yeah, sounds good.
That's our episode. Thanks again to Mike Palumbo for being on the episode and discussing and nerding out over devs with me. And great recommendation. And thank you for listening. Be sure to check out michaelwhistler.com if you're curious about some of my books and just checking out my blog and other episodes of the podcast. Be sure to catch up on those at my website, michaelwhistler.com. In the meantime, I hope you're being well and safe, watching or reading really good sci-fi, and asking really big questions. We'll talk to you soon.